spokesman for Iran's armed forces warns Israel and its Western supporters will pay a high price if they cross Iran's red lines. Iran's foreign minister tells the UN chief Tehran's punishing response to Israel falls within the framework of legitimate defense and based on international law. And U.S. Israeli genocide in Gaza has claimed close to 34,000 Palestinian lives, 75% of them women and children. A senior spokesperson for Iran's armed forces has warned Israel and its Western supporters that they'll pay a heavy price if they cross Iran's red lines. Brigadier General Abolfaz Shekarchi warned the leaders of the U.S., the U.K., France, and Germany to stop supporting the rogue, law-breaking, child-killing, terrorist Israeli regime. He said if those Western countries and Israel cross red lines, then Iran's response will be much more powerful than the earlier punishment it carried out against the regime. Shekarchi reiterated the Islamic Republic is not a warmonger and does not seek to spread the war. He then advised Western backers of Israel to come to their senses and see support for the illegitimate and terrorist Israeli regime instead of condemning Iran's legitimate and legal response to its criminal behavior. The Iranian foreign minister says Tehran's punishing response to Israel's attack on its Syria embassy was carried out within the framework of legitimate defense and based on international law. Hossein Emir Abdullahian made the comments in a phone call with the UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres. He said the Islamic Republic only targeted a number of Israeli military positions which had been used by the regime in its attack on Iran's consular building in Damascus. He emphasized Iran's response to the regime could have been much stronger. The top diplomat added the only option left for Tehran was to take military action, especially after the UN Security Council failed to condemn Israel's attack on Iran's diplomatic premises. The Iranian foreign minister had earlier made similar remarks in phone calls with his Chinese, British, German, Russian, Austrian, Indonesian, Malaysian, and Slovenian counterparts. Iran's retaliatory military operation against Israel and the inability of the regime's air defenses to intercept a significant number of Iranian missiles and drones have prompted Tel Aviv's allies to try and condemn Iran's legitimate response. We discussed this issue earlier in our news review program.
Well, welcome to the news review. I want to welcome Gisu Mishal Ahmedi to this part of the program. Gisu, very good to have you. Let's look at what is being said. It's really interesting because Iran continues to cite its legitimate right, according to international law, for the retaliatory attacks that it initiated on Saturday night. However, we look at some of the reactions from some of the hegemonic front countries, whether we're talking about the UK or US or France, and we see that actually they have condemned Iran for those attacks. Your assessment, I mean, you have talked to the foreign minister, and just particularly in dealing with Iran's right to have initiated those retaliatory attacks.
Well, Marzia, first of all, let's go back to the United Nations Security Council session that was held at the request of Israelis, of course. Even in that session, we saw that other than a few of Israel's allies, who are obviously going to side with Israel at whatever cost, other countries did condemn that attack. And that is, according to the Vienna Conventions, Marzia, this is nothing specific to Iran or any particular country. All the signatories of the Vienna Convention and all the countries in the world enjoy this right that their diplomatic missions are immune. They should remain immune even at times of war. They've been trying to side with Israel. Even David Cameron on Sky News, I was watching that. It was quite interesting to see that the presenter asked him, what would the UK do if its diplomatic mission was attacked and razed to the ground. And he said, definitely the UK would give an immediate and very strong response to that.
Thanks so much for being with me, Ali Salam, Editor-in-Chief of Basira Press. Your thoughts on the overall situation, because one thing that we have seen, too, that ever since the Iran's retaliatory attack, we have also seen those who are trying to lessen the impact or the effectiveness of what Iran has done, basically by downplaying what Iran had done, the retaliatory strike. Your thoughts on that?
So this retaliatory attack has really shamed all of the disinformation peddlers and those who wish to downplay Iran's role in the region. And this has had so many levels. On the military level, that they were able to surpass four countries' air defense systems, the United States, England, Jordan, and then finally the Zionist regime, and then be able to land several ballistic missiles into the actual military sites that were used for this heinous attack on Iranian soil. And then there was the PR aspect, especially with, for example, people realizing who is really on the side of Palestine. Just on so many levels, this is aside from even the military aspect, it's just really exposed the truth. It's shown who is on which side, and I think that a lot of people don't like that, and they don't like to admit that they were wrong. So they're obviously going to cry crocodile tears, and they're going to try to do mental gymnastics. But the truth is plain for all who have eyes to see, and who are not blinded by sectarianism or any other kind of propaganda. Iran is the rational actor in the region. Iran is the moral actor in the region. Iran doesn't like to see people's blood being shed. In fact, this force is being used in order to stop the blood from being shed. And so that they know that this is only a fraction of Iran's capabilities. The lesser technologies were used, such as the drones, missiles. They have much more powerful ones, much more accurate ones, much faster ones. And so they know that this is only the preview of what's to come. So Iran used most of its inexpensive and lesser type munitions, while Israel had spent over $1 billion just in one night on the various missiles that it shot to shoot down the swarm of drones, most of which were decoys in order to protect the higher power ballistic missiles that made their targets. So I think they're absolutely, absolutely humiliated, because I don't think they can deal with another round. How many billions of dollars do they really have to be able to spend in basically less than a few hours? So this is something that has definitely shown Iran's military dominance. And this is the language that the genocidal terrorists understand. They're not going to be swayed by the NGOs. They're not going to be swayed by any of these others that seek to delegitimize resistance. This is the way to bring an end to this genocide, is when they fear losing billions of dollars in a matter of hours and high-precision missiles hitting their sensitive targets.
And on that note, I thank both of you being with me on this news review. Gisu Misha Ahmedi, Ali Salam, Editor-in-Chief, Basira Press.
All hypersonic missiles fired by Iran's Islamic Revolution Guard Corps hit the designated targets in Israel, marking the first time that Iran has employed such weapons against real targets. Sources have informed Press TV the Israeli regime and its supporters failed to intercept any of the hypersonic missiles fired. These missiles were fired alongside drones, other ballistic and cruise missiles during the retaliatory operation against Israel. Iran is one of few countries that possess the technology to produce the hypersonic missiles. These missiles can travel at stunning speeds and hit targets with great precision. Iran's hypersonic missiles are highly maneuverable, enabling them to have an unpredictable flight path in order to evade enemy radars. IRGC says tracking Iran's hypersonic missiles is impossible. Iran's Operation True Promise was in retaliation for the Israeli regime's terrorist attack against Iran's embassy in Damascus, Syria. the first time Iran's used a variety of military assets, namely drones and missiles, in conjunction with radar hacking technology to hit its intended target with pinpoint accuracy. Here's a look at Iran's military prowess and why this operation was successful.
Iran's Operation True Promise was a significant counterattack that proved successful in a host of arenas, especially the military one. Now, this is while Israel is not only downplaying the efficiency of this operation, but it is falsely reporting that most of the incoming missiles and drones were intercepted. But that is not exactly the case. The multiple drone and missile attacks were preceded by a series of cyber attacks on the Zionist regime's power grid and radar systems. Now, the Zionist regime's radars were under a hack attack, which forced the closure of the airspace over occupied territories. Now, the hack also interrupted the coalition between the Israeli air defense systems and their American counterparts. Well, four rounds of drone and missile attacks were executed at 11 p.m. local time by the IRGC. Now, the first wave included dozens of Shahed 136 kamikaze drones, about 100 units of Delta wing-shaped, low-observable and low-signature loitering munitions with a range of 2,000 kilometers and a speed of about 200 kilometers per hour. Now, that carried a warhead of 50 kilograms. Well, after the first wave, three more wave attacks that followed at intervals of about half an hour, and it is estimated that a total of 318 drones and missiles were launched. Keep in mind that this operation is the largest drone attack in Iran's history. Well, the numbers certainly prove that. Now, next came the launch of a series of cruise and ballistic missiles, accompanied by simultaneous drone and missile strikes by the Axis of Resistance groups from Iraq, Yemen, and Lebanon. Well, the types of missiles are speculated to be Kheba Shikan ballistic missile with a range of over 1,400 kilometers and a half a ton warhead. And the unthinkable became a reality when Iran unveiled the production of hypersonic missiles at the end of 2023, a more advanced version of the Fatah hypersonic missile. No one, well, would have guessed that they would be using it in a counterattack operation just 5 months later. And all hypersonic missiles did hit their designated targets, marking the first time Iran employed such weapons against real targets. It was reported that at least seven were used in this operation, which hit the Nevatim Air Base located in the Negev Desert. It hosts the F-35 planes used in the terrorist attack on the Iranian consulate in Damascus. Well, another base in the Negev Desert was also hit. The Ramon Air Base was target of multiple missiles, leaving a trail of destruction. 12 countries participated in the operation to protect Israel. There were 10 actually, including more than 170 fighter jets. Just 250 defense missiles were launched from our ships, but more than 60% of the missiles hit the targets. Who are the Iranian engineers? Again, pointing to Iran's military might. Well, Iran's military posture has now changed when it comes to the Israeli regime. Major General Hossein Salami, the commander of the Islamic Revolution Guard Corps, IRGC, has said, from now on, if the Zionist regime targets any of our personnel, properties, and civilians, we will not hesitate to retaliate from our own lands.
Day 192 of Israel's genocidal war on Gaza, and it claims 68 Palestinian lives as the occupation forces intensify strikes across the besieged strip. The Palestinian death toll is now close to 34,000, most of them women, children, and the elderly. Numbers fear to be much higher. At least 8,000 Palestinians are still unaccounted for and presumed buried under rubble. The Palestinian Health Ministry has put number injured at around 76,000. Israeli attacks have caused massive destruction throughout the Strip as well. According to the UN and the World Bank, damage to critical infrastructure in Gaza is estimated at around $18.5 billion. The World Health Organization's Director for Eastern Mediterranean Regional Office, currently in Tehran, says the organization has been pushing forward with the evacuation of patients from Gaza. However, according to Hanan Balki, process is disappointingly slow and challenging.
And the death of the men and the women and the people of Gaza. The country office, as we said, we have 22 member states, and the occupied Palestinian territory is one of the member states part of the Eastern Mediterranean region, where we also have our own presence within Gaza and the West Bank. And the WHO staff, with the support of the regional office and the HQ, so the whole of WHO, has been in full support of the activities, the missions, the visits, the evacuations of some of the patients, not to the level of our desire, but we have been pushing very hard by advocating for further access, further support. We also have major work in coordinating with the relevant entities on the evacuation and identifying hospitals and countries that can accommodate patients and treat them. As I mentioned, now I'm confused where I mentioned that inside. We had also my own visit to the Rafah border and my visit to Al Arish hospital that is hosting and receiving the injured from Gaza, where we are discussing all the time on how to improve the healthcare provision, but also with the UN Secretary General, who recently also visited. We're discussing on advocating for the end of these atrocities in the occupied Palestinian territory.
Thanks for tuning in, and goodbye for now.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard by the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Southern Africa can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.ir/en. Now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
In the Limelight.
As the Zionist regime's invasion of Gaza enters its 6th month, the impact on Palestinian children has been devastating. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. The Electronic Intifada wrote, UN agencies report that, following the Zionist regime's invasion of Gaza, at least 17,000 Palestinian children have been orphaned or separated from relatives, and 1 in 6 children under the age of 2 are acutely malnourished. The Health Ministry in Gaza reported that 23 children died from malnutrition and dehydration in recent weeks. At least 32,000 people killed in Gaza, over 13,000 are children. The UN has warned that nearly 580,000 Palestinians, a quarter of Gaza's population, are one step away from famine. There are many such horrible recollections. The psychological trauma rooted in the ravages of war are scars that last a lifetime for children. The Zionist regime continues to block humanitarian aid from reaching Palestinians in Gaza and has attacked Palestinians attempting to receive aid. The last day of February witnessed Israeli regime forces massacring over 100 unarmed Palestinians, queuing for flour and humanitarian assistance. 3 days later, the Zionist regime killed 9 Palestinian civilians in line for flour in 2 separate attacks. Having already vetoed 3 UN Security Council resolutions for a ceasefire, the Biden administration also blocked a statement that condemned the flour bag massacre, as it did not have all the facts yet on the ground. Even though Washington has supplied the Zionist regime military with massive quantities of munitions and political cover, it has consistently claimed that it is unable to influence Israeli regime policy. Instead, the Biden administration initiated airdrops of ready meals into Rafah. The airdrops are not even close to sufficient considering the dire needs of the population. And on March 8, the falling crates killed 5 people, including 2 children, when a parachute or parachutes failed to open. Biden's proposed temporary port will take weeks to complete as disease and malnourishment grow. Meanwhile, the child killer regime of Israel has continued its campaign and is employing American weapons. As the first aid drops were delivered, an Israeli drone strike targeted Palestinians huddling in tents outside Rafah's Emirati hospital. At least 11 civilians, including children and 2 health workers, were killed, and at least 50 people were injured. For 5 months, the Biden administration has defended Israel's actions and offered only muted criticism. Washington has remained steadfast in its support, despite the overwhelming evidence of war crimes, including the determination by the International Court of Justice of a genocide. Spokespersons for the White House, State Department, and National Security Council, as well as President Biden and Secretary of State Antony Blinken, have repeatedly dismissed or diminished reports by the United Nations, journalists, and humanitarian organizations of the humanitarian catastrophe that has been live-streamed to a horrified global audience. Even after the flour bag massacre NSC spokesman John Kirby insisted that Israel has tried to help with the delivery of humanitarian assistance, yet a handful of Israeli protesters have been successful in blocking aid trucks from entering Gaza. The carnival-like atmosphere of these Israeli protesters at the border crossing has occurred in full view of international media as well as the Zionist regime's military. The child killer regime of Israel has also prevented basic necessities from entering Gaza and contributed to the pain and suffering of Palestinian children. CNN has reported that maternity kits, sleeping bags and equipments have been barred from entering Gaza. Anesthetics, oxygen cylinders and crutches are also on the list of rejected items. The shocking scenes of children undergoing surgical procedures and amputations without anesthesia have now become routine, as has the acronym WCNSF for Wounded Child with No Surviving Family. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres, 6 November, warning that Gaza was becoming a graveyard for children, has been realized. Hent Rajab, a 6-year-old girl, who called begging for help after the Zionist regime troops targeted the car in which she and her family were traveling, was killed after a long wait along with the paramedics who went to save her. Infants like 45-day-old Mahmoud Fatou, who died due to severe dehydration and malnutrition, or Ahmad, a child who was rescued after 9 days under the rubble, a skeleton, or Talin, 10, who recognized her mother's body by the hair. And there are countless stories of mothers who held their children in arms when they took their last breath. And this is only a partial telling. There are thousands of others whose stories we don't know. With thousands still buried under the rubble, the stories of many of the dead children may never be told. Yet the Biden administration repeatedly insists it needs more evidence before it can condemn or criticize the Zionist regime's actions, standards it has not applied to Palestinians or UN agencies or the ICJ. Children in Gaza have suffered the loss of their closest family members, in many cases their parents, siblings, grandparents, and other relatives. Their homes and schools have been destroyed, their neighbors killed or displaced. Their books and toys have been lost, their pets have been killed, their favorite park has been razed. Under constant bombardment, the Palestinian children are still grappling with the greatest challenges of siege, destruction, displacement, and starvation. These challenges will only increase in the weeks and months after the fighting ends. And the children will never forgive the silence and complicity of Western regimes who supported the Zionist regime's actions.
IRIB English Radio presents Viewpoints.
Viewpoints.
With the presence of different scholars.
The presence of different scholars. IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. Call of Islam page will welcome to another episode of the program Viewpoints. I'm Atal, the host of this program. With me in the studio, we have two special guest speakers from the Islamic House of Qom, Sheikh Rouhani and Sayyid Zain. Sayyid Zain, assalamu alaikum.
Walaikum salam wa rahmatullah.
And Shaykh Rouhani, salam alaikum to you.
Walaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Now that the holy month of Ramadan is finished, so many people might ask, during these 30 days and nights, we had really nice spiritual experiences, and the effects of the holy month of Ramadan are going gradually to be fade away. After the holy month of Ramadan, what should we do in order to keep them alive, or it's better to say to keep the effects of the holy month of Ramadan safe after when the holy month of Ramadan is finished, especially during the month of Shawwal, which is the first month after Ramadan. And as a Muslim, Sayyid Zain, the Holy Quran is an inseparable part of the lives and Islamic lifestyle of the people. It seems that the people during and the Muslims during the holy month of Ramadan are more close to, or especially closer to, the Holy Quran and its text. What should we do if we want to continue such a way after the holy month of Ramadan?
So as you said, the holy month is intertwined with the Holy Quran. And perhaps you can even say that the importance of the month to extent is due to the revelation of the Holy Quran, Laylatul Qadr. And Muslims, regardless of, you know, what type of Muslim they are, they read the Holy Quran in this month, and try to finish it, and try to ponder over it, and have different gatherings. So there's nothing stopping us from doing that afterwards as well. That what we started in this month, that inshallah, make that a habit. That there should be some Quran that we're reading every day. It doesn't have to be one whole juz. If it's the juz, then that's really good. Mm-hmm. It can be a few pages, one page even. We start low and build on top of that. But make it a habit that it has to be done continuously and basically every day. And not just like a very, like a quick reading that you're just like reading it to get done, but rather, spending some time with it as well. If you don't understand Arabic, then looking at a translation, uh-huh, and perhaps pondering over, some of the verses, how they relate to us, what is this verse trying to say to me?
Yes.
Like that. So inshallah, it's a very good idea that after the holy month as well, that we try to keep, reciting the Quran, that relationship that we built with the Quran in the holy month, try to maintain it, mm-hmm, by reading a little bit, but yes, every day.
Okay, that's all right. And I think keeping records of what you did during Ramadan can also be a nice help to you, isn't it? Usually the people forget when the holy month of Ramadan is finished. I mean, a book of records of the good deeds that you did in order to, for example, repractice them or repeat them during other days of the year can also help you in order to have a better Islamic lifestyle. And as we said, at the end of the holy month of Ramadan, the people, the Muslims, are supposed and are obliged to pay Zakat al-Fitriyah. I mean, these habits of paying your khums or zakat, which are really important, I mean, beside the other actions during the or sadaqat, are really helpful. It can help the people. And Shaykh, these are some of the individual effects. What about the societal ones? Do you think that the holy month of Ramadan has societal effects too or not?
Yes, of course. Why not? For example, when in the holy month of Ramadan, all Muslims from different nationalities, mm-hmm, different races, different, even we can term it as classes, if there are some different kind of classification of the people, not that class system that we have in other religions, I mean different categories of the, yes, people, poor, let's say rich, maybe colored or white or whatever. So from all across across the globe, you see that all the people from different nationalities, different nations, different countries, they all fasting in the same, let's say, model and the same way. So it gives us a kind of, harmony.
Yes.
A kind of unity. And at the same time, it gives Muslims a kind of strengthenness, mm-hmm, that we are together. We, yes, are the same. We are all with each other. We are all supportive and helping each other, Because it is like many of the ibadat in Islam, it has this kind of social sort of aspect. Like, for example, Hajj is the same thing when, yes, Muslims gather in the holy city of Mecca. Regardless of their different nationalities, identities, they worship Almighty Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Same is the case with the holy month of Ramadan that gathers Muslim around one, let's say, basic belief, which is fasting. Mm-hmm. And practicing or performing these Islamic belief, it unites us. It gives us a kind of unity. And this is one point that we can mention about the social, let's say, aspect of this holy month of Ramadan. When you are united, when you are, let's say, in a kind of harmonious lifestyle, all Muslims, it has also a kind of political message to the enemies of Muslims, to the non-Muslims. It conveys a kind of message to them that, look, they all are together. Mm-hmm. They can be united. Yes. They can forget about their, for example, differences. And they can unite themselves on basic kind of Islamic principles like fasting, like praying, like Hajj, like the jihad, for example, these sort of principles that we have in Islam. So, of course, it absolutely has a kind of socio-political kind of aspect as well. But within the Islamic Ummah, within the Muslims, again, as we say, that when you are fasting, of course, you are caring about each other. You try, at least in this holy month of Ramadan, you try to find out some of these problems of your neighbors, of the people, try to be helpful, try to be supportive of them. These are again a kind of social sort of aspect of this fasting, the holy month of Ramadan. Yes.
And Sayyid Zain, what about you? What do you think the social effects of the holy month of Ramadan are, and which one of them can be kept, we can say, in our lifestyle after Ramadan?
So I think what the Sheikh mentioned is regarding unity. That's a very great social effect of the month of Ramadan, and I think as Muslims, you feel it as well, right? We feel more awakened, more together, more willing to help each other, more willing to even on the political level go out and try to like the Palestinians who are being oppressed right now, help them. And it's a very important social effect. And a reason additional to what Sheikh had mentioned is that, inshallah, as believers, because of our obedience to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, more so in this month, that, from dawn till, the evening, we are obeying Him, inshallah, while fasting and praying more in the Quran, that our hearts are more purified and we are closer to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And because we're closer to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, we're closer to each other as well. Because, all the believers, when they're closer to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, they become closer to each other as well. Then that wilayat is, together with the other believers as well. And therefore, more concern is there for the other believers. And one is, able to kind of go out and help each other more.
Yes, that's all right. Okay. Thank you very much. Of course, during the holy month of Ramadan, and at the end of the holy month of Ramadan, the people, as Shaykh also said, are taking care about their fellow men and brothers and sisters in a society, in your neighbors, This is a good habit, Sometimes the people invite each other to iftar or suhoor time, just giving away, the food, taking away food. These are really good habits. They can be kept alive, during the other days or after the holy month of Ramadan, to at least, especially in this modern world, the fast speed hectic world, that everybody is busy, maybe with 2-3 more jobs, in his lifestyle, this is really good habit to keep some of these practices alive in our lifestyle after the holy month of Ramadan too. Okay, your final remarks, Sheikh?
Yes, one point that I wanted to mention here is that since our Muslim brothers, some of them might live in non-Islamic societies, they should remember this point, this very important point, that in Muslim societies, you may not find homeless people. Homeless people are those people that no one care about them. Mm-hmm. They lose everything.
Yes.
But in Islamic societies, even Muslims are poor. Even Muslims themselves are needy.
Okay.
But you may not find the people like homeless people.
Mm-hmm.
Because Muslims do not let their Muslim brothers to reach to that state of life that has nothing.
Yes.
Because we have zakat, we have khums, we have charities, we have sadaqat.
Yes.
By the help of this, we're in zakat al-fitr. that we have at the end of the holy month of Ramadan. It should be distributed for the poor, for the needy, you know? Or zakat, we have different kind of zakats, we have different kind of khums or saham al-imam we have that should be distributed by the maraji for the poor, for the needy. That's what's really interesting, that sometimes we have Islamic society, Muslims are very poor, as compared to, for example, Western societies. Yes. But within these Muslim poor people, needy people, you may not find homeless.
This is
the very good teaching of Islam and doctrine of Islam, that if you fulfill, if you observe these rulings of Islam, then of course you will care about your Muslim brothers, you know, and you will not tolerate that, you will not, you cannot be or cannot tolerate that you see a Muslim brother living, losing his job, losing his, for example, house, his properties, sometimes even children and wife and everything, you know.
Yes.
They're just alone. If you look at sometimes in Tokyo, sometimes I see in the videos that thousands of people, homeless people, are just living in the streets.
Yeah.
No one care about them. They die.
Yes.
In many other cities, metropolitan cities. But in Islamic cities, if you go to Bangladesh, if you go to Pakistan, Afghanistan, Africa, let's say Arab states, you may not find such people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is Islam.
Yes.
This is Islam, and this is the blessings of Almighty Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala that is bestowed on Muslims based on these teachings and doctrines of Islam.
Okay.
So that's why I really recommend Muslim brothers to be very much careful about giving this zakat.
Yes.
Zakat al-Fitr at the end of this holy month of Ramadan.
Yes.
Try to be supportive, try to be helpful to other Muslim brothers, even in non-Islamic societies.
Mm-hmm.
They should care about them, because the non-Muslims may not care.
Mm-hmm.
But we, at least, if we cannot help the others, at least help our Muslim brothers, because it's a duty. You know, sometimes if you see your Muslim brothers in London, I don't know, in other cities, that they are... is about to become like homeless people, then you have to support him.
Yes.
You have to give zakat, sadaqat, khums, saham. You have to, for example, inform, for example, the wukala of ulama that this man is like that, you know?
Okay.
Do not let your Muslim sister, your Muslim brother, particularly in non-Islamic society, to reach that state of life. This is one of the great teaching of the holy month of Ramadan. I hope that inshallah in the spirituality of this holy month of Ramadan inshallah enables us to be more caring about our Muslim and Muslim brothers and sisters, particularly in non-Islamic societies.
Inshallah. Thank you very much. Any final remarks, are you saying?
Just to add to what Sheikh was saying, just I was reading today that in Palestine, you know, in Gaza, when there is very little food and all these things. This brother, he was describing that one of his family members, they got hold of a cucumber, that it was smuggled into Gaza, into northern Gaza. And after, you know, I don't know how long they got to see a cucumber. But even this cucumber, it was gifted from one to another. And at the end, you know, half of it was shared with the neighbors. And you can you imagine that they're so needy of food, but they're still sharing and they're still caring about one another.
That's all right. Thank you very much, Sayyid Zain and Sheikh Rouhani, for a nice elaboration regarding the topic, how to keep the spirit of the holy month of Ramadan alive when this holy month is finished. It was very kind of you. And thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of the program Question and Answer on Islamic Beliefs. For more information on this program and other programs, visit our website, parstoday.ir, Call of Islam page. Till another episode, God bless you all and fi amanallah.
You came to us with a heart so full of love, and you showed that you're the one who cares the most, and to us you've always been so close. Everyone will say, please save me, except Al-Habib. Ummati, Ummati, يقولها لنا يوم القيامة أمتي أمتي يقولها شفاعة أنا لها أنا لها
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/parstodayen. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/parstodayenglish.
The Limelight.
Shortly before midnight on Sunday, April 14th, Iran launched a swarm of suicide drones and missiles at the occupied Palestinian territories in response to the Zionist regime's cowardly strike on Iran's consulate in Damascus on April 1st. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Press TV wrote, shortly before midnight on Sunday, April 14th, Iran launched a swarm of suicide drones and missiles at the occupied Palestinian territories in response to the Zionist regime's cowardly strike on Iran's consulate in Damascus on April 1st. The flock of drones could be heard buzzing over the Iraqi airspace, a signature sound that many have attributed to the extremely effective and lethal Shahed drone family. Shortly after the first wave, another wave was launched approximately 30 minutes later. Islamic Revolution Guards Corps IRGC officials in a statement confirmed what they called Operation True Promise, living up to their promise of definitive revenge against the apartheid regime. According to the IRGC, Operation True Promise will be conducted in multiple stages until the requirements for the retaliation to be complete are made. Iran's Defense Minister Mohammad Reza Ashtiani also cautioned countries in the region against opening their airspace or soil to the Zionist regime for attacks against Iran, warning of a decisive response. Leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, had in his Eid al-Fitr sermon vowed to punish the Zionist regime for the mistake of targeting an Iranian diplomatic facility. He made a similar warning a day after the attack was carried out earlier this month, saying, the Zionist regime would be punished. He doesn't beat around the bush. Since then, the Zionist regime has been in a state of paralysis, with its settlers living between false alarms and stocking up on supplies like gas, food and water. Flights were cancelled and the Zionist regime's economy suffered a tremendous shock at a time when its economy was already struggling. Importantly, many countries in the region reportedly refused to allow their territory to be used by the U.S. as a launchpad for attacks against the Islamic Republic, showing changing regional dynamics. In the past few days, the phone of Iran's Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian kept buzzing with several Western officials, pleading for Iran to stand down and exercise restraint. However, the decision for retaliation was solidified the minute the Israeli missile dropped in Damascus. The Zionist regime had to pay for its foolhardiness. The Zionists have made the gravest miscalculation in their disgraceful lives. There was no strategic objective to be achieved from striking the Iranian consulate, murdering several IRGC officers on the anniversary of Imam Ali's martyrdom. The United States, the primary backer of the Zionist regime, has been terrified of a regional war, as they have already surrendered militarily to Yemen, pleading with Ansarullah for a diplomatic solution. The Zionist regime was banking on U.S. support to deter Iranian retaliation. They were wrong. Zionist soldier vacations were cancelled ahead of the attack, and all reservists were ordered to report for duty. Israeli regime forces issued warnings to settlers to avoid large gatherings while remaining close to shelters. Meanwhile, Israeli officials pleaded with their allies to do anything to stop Iran. But the Islamic Republic of Iran was not going to back down. Despite warnings from the U.S., mere hours before the launch of the drone and missile swarm, the Islamic Revolutionary Guards Corps seized an Israeli-linked ship in the Strait of Hormuz, prompting the U.S. to go into full alert in the region. This can likely be interpreted as a message to U.S. officials that Iran will attack ships in the Strait of Hormuz, which controls 20-30% of the world's oil flow. If the U.S. gets involved and tries to prevent Iran's retaliation or meddles in any way, further destabilizing the Tel Aviv regime is a series of virtual attacks, disabling Israeli energy grids and air defense systems, all the while Iraq's Kataib Hezbollah, Yemen's Ansarullah, and Lebanon's Hezbollah launched their own series of drone and rocket attacks, exhausting Israeli military systems. Syrian air defenses are on high alert for Zionist planes only. These are just forces outside of occupied Palestine. There is, of course, the Palestinian resistance both in Gaza and in the occupied West Bank actively confronting the Zionist regime on multiple fronts. The axis of resistance, created through the careful planning and coordination of the late anti-terror linchpin General Qasem Soleimani, is demonstrating for the first time a coordinated front against the Israeli occupation. Israeli regime Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has been moved to a bunker in occupied Al-Quds, while typical weekend protests against him in Tel Aviv were dispersed in anticipation of the Iranian strike. Weekend travel for U.S. President Joe Biden was cancelled for him to meet with his national security team and plan ways to defend proxy entity in Tel Aviv. The Iranian retaliation is within the scope of international law, which the Zionist regime has defiled time and time again. An attack on a consulate is a red line that any country would be able to respond to through military means. It is also a flagrant violation of the Vienna Convention, which the Zionist regime adheres to. The hypocrisy of Western regimes in dissuading Iran to not respond shows that they do not abide by their own rules-based order. If this were an attack on any Western regime, they would have responded with a disproportionate force. Iran's response is proportional and just, and comes after much patience in dealing with the rogue regime. Entire Israeli regime bases have been cleared in preparation for the Iranian retaliation. Shahed drones have pierced into the Israeli airspace and reached Tel Aviv, where Israeli jets are attempting to shoot them down. It is important to note that Shahed drones are harder to shoot down with regular air defense systems due to their low heat signature. The drones themselves are more than likely cannon fodder to shock the Zionist entity and keep them occupied, while Iranian cruise missiles follow shortly behind. Videos of settlers panicking as explosions ring across the Tel Aviv skyline are circulating online. Iran has shown that it is more than capable of shocking the Zionist entity, with Zionist forces reporting that they underestimated the Iranian response. As leader of the Islamic Revolution has said many times, the days of hit and run are over. We are at a turning point in history where the Zionist entity is met with the very reality of their extinction. Celebrations are erupting outside Al-Aqsa Mosque and across the occupied West Bank. There were even fireworks at the iconic Milad Tower in Tehran after the attacks. The morale of the Islamic world is being restored as Iran acts as the harbinger of regional stability. This is the first hour alone on April 14, 2024. Operation True Promise is far from over, but the die is cast. As Iranian drones and missiles pierce the skies of Tel Aviv and the rest of the occupied Palestine, for the first time in nearly 7 months, no Israeli warplanes fly over Gaza.
Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. This is IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.